And now we're happy to bring on James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
The first question, the big story this summer was Parise and Suter, and they both obviously signed with Minnesota. Were you surprised by that? And why do you think they went to Minnesota instead of other options like Detroit was an obvious one, or re-signing in New Jersey for Parise?
I was a little bit surprised about it. There wasn't hardly any talk about Minnesota, and it sounds like it all sort of came together in the days after July 1. So it became more of a realistic possibility for, you know, both for the Wild and for the players involved. It became more of a realistic possibility around, you know, closer to July 2nd or 3rd. And the number one reason I would say that it happened is just because of those players' ties to that community, you know. And Ryan Suter's wife is from basically a suburb of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the Parise family is very, very well known in Minnesota just because of you know, his father played in the NHL there, was an assistant coach for the North Stars. There's a lot of history there, and I don't know if you can ever predict how a player feels about his hometown and how strongly he feels about going home and playing there. And I think we saw the same thing with Jason Garrison, who took a lot less money to go play in Vancouver, which is essentially his hometown as well. So, you know, it's a wild card, I think, in these situations with free agents. And it turned out for these two guys that the pull of playing basically at home and together was really strong. So, I mean, you know, good on Minnesota. I think that both players would have got that kind of money with whatever team they signed with, so it wasn't like they overpaid. And it's going to be interesting to see if they can build a contending team around those two guys.
Yeah, so have fun with the Toronto rumors for every player from Toronto, I guess, from here on out, even worse than usual.
Well, it doesn't seem to be working out that way. You know, I think that in over the last 5 or 6 years, Toronto's become less and less of a destination because the Leafs haven't been a very good team. And it just seems like a lot of the star guys don't want to play here because the team hasn't been very good, which, you know, obviously Minnesota's not very good either, but also because you play in this in sort of a bubble here where everything is hyper-focused on the Leafs and basically their failures. So, you know, there's a lot of guys, I'm trying to think of some examples, you know, like I think Rick Nash had a little bit of interest in coming here, but I mean, he'd rather go somewhere like New York or Philadelphia where he's not the big dog in town. I think it would be very, very difficult to be someone like Rick Nash or a superstar from the Toronto area to come and play here. I think there would just be so much attention on that guy and so much pressure that he wouldn't face in a lot of other markets.
That's a good segue into what I want to talk about next, and that's Rick Nash and Roberto Luongo, and there seems to be a lot of other players around the league and a lot of other teams where they have forwards, they need defense, or they have defense and they need forwards, and there seems to be a diminishing in the rumors involving Rick Nash and Roberto Luongo lately from the media. That could just be because the media has kind of been off after the free agent frenzy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think they're still hot trade talk about them among the general managers, and I was wondering what you thought about both players and what you think about other possible trades around the league.
Well, the problem in both cases is that the teams that have those guys believe that their worth on the market is more than the teams that want them are willing to pay. You know, Columbus has been, it's been well documented. They've been asking for way too much. You know, they've been asking for a package of 3 or 4 pretty useful players because the Blue Jackets are desperate and Scott Housen is desperate to really win this trade and bring something in that's going to make the Blue Jackets competitive in the next couple of years. And that's incredibly difficult to do. I would say it's probably impossible. So they're going to have to lower the asking price for Rick Nash in order to move him out because he's just got such a huge contract. You know, he's the cap hit there of $7.8 million a year. I mean, it's more than what Parise and Suter are going to cost against the cap. It's more than, I think, every other player in the NHL other than about 5 guys. So that's a lot to pay for a Rick Nash who has only really been a 60-65-point guy the last couple of years. And Luongo, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, there's hardly any teams that are willing to take on the contract that Luongo has. I think it's basically down to really 2 in Florida and Toronto, and neither wants to give up much in terms of assets for him. So it's a bit of a stalemate right now, And you're right. I mean, and it's not only just the media that's on vacation right now after a long season. I mean, a lot of the GMs are at their cottages or taking a break. And, you know, with the way CBA talks are going to come together, you know, I don't think there's quite the urgency to get those trades done right now. And it might take a month, might take 2 months to get both those guys moved, but I think eventually they will be. And if they haven't been traded by, you know, mid-September, then you're going to see all the rumors really pick up and things come together then. But I could see it being pretty quiet for the next month or so.
So one of the GMs that I saw an article in the Globe and Mail that he was actually enjoying some Canada Day festivities, which is interesting, is Brian Burke. He has been uncharacteristically quiet. Not a lot has happened. Why do you think that is, and what do you see for Toronto going forward this summer?
Well, Burke says that he didn't like any of the asking prices on July 1 for the guys he was interested in, and I mean, we can speculate on who that is. It's probably guys like Brandon Prust and, you know, some of the checking types that were getting, you know, close to $2 million a year on 3- and 4-year deals. They weren't interested in doing something like that, so they didn't do anything. And Burke says they're going to be very busy. He says, you know, he wants to make his team bigger, and he wants to add a goaltender, and he wants to add a center, and he wants to do all of that via trade, which is going to be pretty interesting if they can accomplish that, because, you know, that's essentially 2 or 3 really big trades that he's going to need to pull off here in the next couple of months. And as I said, I mean, teams are asking a lot. You know, it's one thing to say you're going to bring in a goaltender. Well, which goaltender are you going to bring in? And, you know, they don't sound like they're very interested in a backup. And a starter, there's not really hardly anyone available. So that puts the Leafs in a situation where they need to and they want to bring in a goaltender. The one available, Roberto Luongo, is the asking price is too high. So, it's a stalemate for the Leafs. And this is obviously, and I know I said this last summer too, but this summer even more so, this is such an important offseason for Brian Burke. You know, his job is on the line here this year, and they need to make the playoffs. So, that's why he's saying they're going to make the team look substantially different than it looks right now. And I'd be guessing, you know, if I said exactly what I think they're going to do, because I don't know where they can find that top six center or that goaltender aside from bringing in Luongo. I think it's going to be really, really difficult to improve the team the amount that it needs to be improved to be a legitimate playoff team.
And what do you think of the rumors this summer that maybe he was going to go sooner rather than later, and you think this is his last year of non-playoff hockey?
I just think that, you know, there's nothing to the rumors that Burke was going to step down or leave. You know, that's been reported on by many people. But they've got new ownership coming in, and I think the fan base is finally getting to a turning point where they're just so disenchanted with the team. And, you know, towards the end of last season, we were seeing a lot of games where, you know, the building was sold out, but a lot of people weren't even showing up to use their tickets. And they just need something positive, I think, to happen here. They need the team to make the playoffs, you know. And Burke's already had him. He's going to hit the 4-year mark here in November. I just can't see them giving him that another year beyond that, basically taking him through 6 or 7 years with the franchise. And no playoff appearances. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if they make a change. And it's going to depend really how the season goes. I mean, maybe if they're really, really close and they miss out, they decide to keep him around. But I think they should be looking long and hard at what they can do potentially if it doesn't work out with Brian Burke.
Right. Jumping a bit to what you were talking about earlier about changes to the Leafs, I guess it's kind of a long shot, but there are still some unsigned players out there who might be interesting to a team really looking to make a splash. Alex Semin, Shane Doan, and there are a couple of others. Where do you think these players might end up? I guess Toronto wouldn't really have that much interest in them, but have you heard anything regarding Semin, Doan, and some of the other guys who are still out here?
Well, I still sort of think that Doan's going to end up back in Phoenix, but it sounds like they're going to go and look at the market and see what offers are there. I mean, it's pretty incredible. I mean, Doan has a big family that in Phoenix. He's got a huge ranch there, and I mean, he's pretty settled, but I think he's decided that, you know, this is going to be the last couple of years in his career, and then maybe he should go and try and win the championship and play in a contending team. And he's been so incredibly loyal to that franchise that it'd be hard to blame him for leaving. But yeah, it's really unfortunate for everyone involved with the Coyotes, you know, the management team there. I've talked to some of the people, some of the executives there, and, you know, they're basically running on a staff that's missing 40% of its staff, and it's really, really difficult there. And I think if they lose someone like Shane Doan, it's going to be another really, really hard blow for that franchise, even if they do end up getting the deal done and the team is sticking around. So, you know, right now I'd put my money on him staying in Phoenix and finding, you know, as long as everything works out with the purchase agreement. And Salmon's a tough one in that my guess is that their asking price right now is too high for teams to commit to. There is definitely some interest. You know, I know that Carolina is interested, and a lot of the interest that is there is sort of a short-term deal, which is what Salmon's been playing on for a while now. Teams are willing to take one, maybe a two-year chance on Alex Salmon, but if his side wants the kind of long-term deal that some free agents have been getting, if he wants 4 or 5 or, you know, a Ray Whitney kind of situation. Ray Whitney only got 2 years, but you know what I mean, like a Yuri Hudler contract or, you know, some of the deals that have been given out. I just don't see that's going to be there for him. So the question for Salmon is, how badly does he want to stay in North America? Does he want to stay here on a 1 or 2 year contract and prove himself? Or does he want to go to the KHL and make huge money because he'd be one of the highest paid guys over there? He'd probably be making double what he can in North America right now. And I'm not sure that anyone really knows his mindset on that. But the fact that he's been willing to wait it out and hasn't just jumped to the KHL right away, I think that says to me that he wants me in North America. And it's just going to be a case of waiting to see if teams will step up and offer him more than just a one-year deal.
So let's go ahead and turn to the CBA. It's kind of a dark cloud there. I guess they've met a couple of times this week, and they're going to meet again next week. Has there been any progress made? And I guess that's we'll just start there. Has there been any progress made, and do you think there's any chance they'll legal start on time?
It's pretty early days right now so far. I mean, they're sort of just setting out the terms of the agreement as they see it and what they see as the problems with the existing CBA. You know, and the league-wide ones are obvious. I mean, they don't want those really long-term contracts anymore. They want players to have a smaller percentage of revenue. And I'm sure part of what the league is presenting right now to the union is just a state of affairs with the league, how many franchises are struggling financially, and where that percentage of revenue comes in there. So this is going to be a case where they're going to be meeting and talking throughout the summer. It's going to run right up to the deadline. The deadline is September 15th when the other CBA expires. And the general feeling in the hockey community right now is that the season's not going to start on time. And what we're probably looking at is a shortened season, one that starts in November or December. But most people in the industry don't think we're going to have a full season lockout again. And one of the reasons is that the NHL has invested a lot of money and time in the Winter Classic. And NBC's heavily invested in that. They're doing 24/7 again, which would start in December. And I don't think they want to get to the point where they're going to be canceling things like 24/7, canceling the Winter Classic. So the drop-dead date for the league and where I think they're going to be able to come to agreement and finally get things together is going to be late November or early December. And we'll definitely have a season that is 50 or 60 games long. Can they get it done sooner than that? Yes, but it's going to be interesting to see how Donald Fehr plays this, because I just can't see him lying down and taking a drop in percentages, because what's apparently been offered by the league so far is below 50% of revenues, which is a huge drop from 57%. So there's a long way to go for them to get to the point where there's going to be an agreement. And I just don't see, you know, some teams have been canceling their rookie camps and things like that so far. I just don't see training camps getting started on time in mid-September. So, unfortunately, fans are going to be stuck when we get going here again and when all the media comes back from vacation and everything. All the stories are going to be about how there's probably not going to be the season starting on time in September.
And so if the players get a smaller percentage, obviously the cap would go down. The cap obviously just went up, and a few teams are spending up pretty high. But do you think so I guess what do you think GMs will end up doing if the cap, you know, drops below? They're going to have to be some big trades, I guess.
Yeah, or, you know, the last time around they had had buyouts that they were able to do that didn't count against the cap. So, you know, maybe they allow something like that, like you can buy out one or two guys without a salary cap hit. And, you know, there are a lot of teams that have guys like that they would like to get rid of, you know, like Keith Ballard in Vancouver and Mike Komisarek in Toronto and on and on and on. And they might especially need that if, you know, there's talk that the league wants to prevent teams from burying money in the minors. And if they do that, then there's going to be guys like a Wade Redden type of scenario where teams are going to have to find a way to get rid of them. Or you know, perfect example is Scott Gomez. I mean, it looks like Montreal is going to be spending over the cap here and then counting on either buying out Gomez with a penalty-free buyout or demoting him. But if they take away the option to send him to the minors, then Montreal's going to need to find a way to get under the cap, and then the Gomez is basically untradeable unless you trade him for another terrible contract somewhere else. So I think what we could see is that they give every team sort of a get-out-of-jail-free card with one or two contracts that they can just wipe off their books, pay the players off, and then those guys become free agents. Because we did see that last time when the other CBA came in, and the cap dropped down you know, to $39 million when there were some teams like the Red Wings and the Rangers that were spending $70 million or more. So they had to get down pretty fast, too. And could be the same situation because, like you said, I mean, there are at least a half dozen teams that are getting up pretty close to that $70 million cap right now.
Okay, well, we'll go ahead and leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us, James.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
We'd like to thank James Myrtle, who was kind enough to take some time out of his busy schedule. He is getting ready for coverage of the Olympics in London. So if you want to check that out, especially of obviously Canadian athletes, you can find that at theglobeandmail.com in the sports section. Also, he is well worth a follow at Myrtle, that's M-I-R-T-L-E. Look for us in a few weeks. We should be doing a big special on tracking. So until then, thanks for listening.